I will now call the third case on today's oral argument calendar. That case is number A24-1315, Jacob Becker and another versus Marx A. Steinhauser and others. I believe counsel are familiar with our procedures. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument. Appellant's counsel will have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal. I will mention that the lectern is adjustable. There are two buttons on the front edge that will move it up or down if you wish. Counsel for appellant, you may approach the lectern and begin. Please state your name and the name of your clients.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Teresa Ferris McLean, and I represent Hillary and Jacob Becker in this matter. May it please the court, counsel. This is a case of medical negligence and of negligent nondisclosure. The evidence at trial on the standard of care was not close. Defendant admitted at trial to the elements of medical negligence, which should have resulted in a finding of medical negligence. However, there was misconduct by opposing counsel, and there were abuses of discretion made by the trial court to objections. And all of that contributed to a jury finding of no negligence, which was against the weight of the evidence at trial. Finally, the court denied plaintiff's motion at trial to amend the pleadings to add a claim for negligent nondisclosure, as Minnesota Rule of Civil Procedure 1502 allows when there is evidence presented at trial. We respectfully are here to ask the court to correct the district court's abuse of discretion by reversing and remanding for a new trial. And there are four issues before this court today. I'm going to start, first of all, with misconduct by opposing counsel. There was, in closing argument, an accusation, an erroneous accusation by defense counsel, that an exhibit used by plaintiff during trial was fraudulent.
Why was it erroneous?
Because it wasn't fraudulent. All of the information that was included in that exhibit was supported by evidence at trial. And therefore, the claim that it was fraudulent is absolutely erroneous, and there was nothing to support that claim. The exhibit at issue, which is found in our addendum at page 17, is something that we frequently do for our trials, and it was a demonstrative exhibit. It was not substantive. It was used to aid the jury, and it was used with an expert, our family medicine expert. And
I think it was the logo is the problem, right? The information may have been supported, but the logo being on there gives the inference that the AHA supported all the information that's on the exhibit.
Typically, in an exhibit like that, we would have several citations. In this case, all of the information that was in that exhibit was supported by the AHA, except for one piece of information, and that was supported by our neurology expert, Dr. Lipson.
What in the exhibit told the jury that the ABA, or American Heart Association, AHA, supported everything except the assertion about liver?
That exhibit was used with our family medicine doctor who testified to that.
Okay, so the jury was supposed to figure out on its own that even though this exhibit says these things and it bears an insignia indicating that it's supported by the American Heart Association, the American Heart Association didn't support everything on there. And they were supposed to know that because your expert said something else.
No, they weren't supposed to know that, Your Honor. At the time that it was used with our family medicine expert, he was asked about the information on it, and he said that he supported, and everything on that was supported except for the liver enlargement, and that was supported by Dr. Scott Lipson, which the jury heard from. The doctor was cross-examined by opposing counsel, and it was very clear during the cross-examination for the jury that the liver enlargement was not something that was found on the AHA website. And so the fact that defense counsel had an opportunity in cross-examination to vigorously cross-examine the expert about the fact that the AHA logo seemed to suggest that it was something taken from AHA. That was never our intent, and we didn't present it that way. We presented it as information and that AHA was one of the supporting citations for that information.
So did you have an opportunity to explain that to the jury in your closing argument?
In closing argument, we focused on the information that was presented and the acute signs of organ damage. And in closing argument, for the first time, we were accused of using a fraudulent exhibit. And that clearly was erroneous. It clearly was untrue. It was intended to inflame the passions of the jury. Fraud is an inflammatory statement. And during cross-examination, defense counsel had never raised the word fraud, had never given us an opportunity to respond to that. And that's one of those accusations that I don't think you can come back from. It's one of those accusations that this court, in some situations, have decided requires a new trial. Because even
you've cited several cases in which those were the circumstances, but in those cases, it seems that there was no support for the accusation that was made in closing argument. But here, there is some support for it, an insinuation of fraud. Not fraud as in legal fraud pleaded and claimed as such. There was no fraud claim alleged. It was an adjective that was used to describe an exhibit.
It was an inflammatory accusation, Your Honor. I think anybody, whether it's a layperson using that word or it's a legal cause of action, people react to the term fraud. And what it does is it completely destroys the credibility, or at least that was the intent here, that it would destroy the credibility of plaintiff. And it did so. And we can see that in the jury's verdict. And, Your Honor, I would just take issue respectfully with the idea that there was support for that claim in the record. There absolutely wasn't support for a claim of fraud, because fraud would require that there's no truth to it. But there was no truth to that exhibit.
But there is no truth that the AHA supports the liver.
There is
the information on the liver and the exhibit. If we take the testimony out of it and we're just looking at the exhibit, there's AHA logo and there's stuff about a liver, and AHA does not support that finding, that information.
Your Honor, that information was supported through other evidence at trial.
And I'm setting aside that other evidence. I'm saying just looking at that exhibit itself, if I'm not listening to that the other evidence that existed at the time, and I'm looking at the AHA logo that's on there, that's saying here's a stamp that says we agree with everything that's on this exhibit.
And that's not what we were saying. We were using it as a citation for information that appeared on the exhibit. It wasn't a citation for all of it. It was a citation for all but the liver and
heart. Is that noted on the exhibit that says this is for all the information except for the liver?
No, Your Honor. We introduced that through the witness that we used the exhibit with. So contemporaneous to the jury seeing that exhibit was this... was this expert saying, these are the things, these are the acute end organs that can be damaged. They were hearing that while they were seeing it.
When the expert was testifying, did the expert distinguish that the liver was not supported in the AHA? Like in that testimony saying, like, here's all the information. And by the way, the liver is not an AHA-supported finding. That's my own.
He testified that it was not his opinion. While we were using the exhibit, it was not his opinion that the liver enlargement was related. And in cross-examination, he did testify that if the AHA website did not support it, he would agree with that. He had no reason to disagree with that. So that information was certainly before the jury during his cross-examination. During his direct, he said, I don't believe the liver is related. And on cross-examination, he admitted that it was not related and that he had not visited the AHA website in order to be able to determine that, but he didn't believe AHA supported that either.
Regarding the word fraud, or I guess whether fraudulent is a fair description, the district court referred to the apparent fact that the exhibit was found on stockphoto.com. Did that fact come in the evidentiary phase, or was that before the court in some other way?
That was part of the cross-examination opposing counsel did of our expert. in terms of AHA, and that they had searched that image and found it on iStock.com, and in fact, that's where it came from. And certainly that further supports our position that this was not anything that we represented as being an AHA document. AHA
Well, who introduced that exhibit, iStockPhoto.com? Who? This came in cross-examination. I'm imagining that defense counsel used it as an exhibit. Isn't this the same thing? Is that what happened?
So my recollection is that they went online at the time in real time and found it.
The
opposing counsel. And honestly, I wouldn't have even known where the image came from myself because someone else at my firm put it together.
But then the stockphoto.com exhibit, that was presented to the jury? I mean, during the cross-examination of the witness?
That was our exhibit. We used an image.
The fact that the exhibit was found on stockphoto.com.
Yes, Your Honor.
That was presented.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that evidentiary support for the word fraudulent, which I will admit is a potent word, but if the exhibit says American Heart Association, when in fact this exhibit came from stockphoto.com, maybe it's a fair word.
I guess the differentiation is this was not presented to the jury as an AHA exhibit. This was presented as our demonstrative, and we are citing to the American Heart Association for information on it. Typically, we would have a list of different organizations that we are citing to for different pieces of the exhibit. In this case, AHA supported all of the information, including all of the information that our expert supported. Our expert, our family medicine expert at trial, did not believe that liver enlargement was a sign of end organ damage. And so he essentially affirmed that the information
was your expert who agreed liver is not one of the organs we look at.
Our family medicine expert agreed.
Okay. So why did you have liver on the exhibit?
Because our neurology expert testified that liver enlargement was a sign of end organ damage. We had two different.
So instead of saying, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, here's our demonstrative exhibit, people disagree whether or not the liver is something we'd look at. Even one of our own experts disagree. Did you explain all that to the jury, or did you just put this exhibit out there with the AHA symbol at the bottom? And nothing on the face of the exhibit indicated to the jury that the AHA does not support the concept that end damage to the liver is relevant here. And I'm not asking what did the jury learn as a result of paying careful and close attention to cross-examination and what two different experts said. I'm asking what did the jury see on that piece of paper, and what on that piece of paper informed the jury that AHA does not support what the paper says, which is we look to end liver damage.
Your Honor, if you just looked at the exhibit and they didn't hear any of the testimony, there would be a question, I think, of whether that was an AHA document.
So then is it wrong to say that there's support in the record for the suggestion that the exhibit was misleading? Intentionally misleading?
I don't know that we would be here if they had used the word misleading, and certainly there was no evidence of intent, Your Honor. That was never our intent, and we used it in order to provide citation for that information, and it was never intended to be represented, and it wasn't, in fact, represented as an AHA document. It was, the AHA was used, unfortunately, I will agree, it was used as a citation. It was never, and we never represented it to the jury or to anyone as an AHA document.
District Court said otherwise. I mean, on page 4 of its post-trial order, it said, Dr. Smith agreed Exhibit 45G was being represented as something from the American Heart Association.
Dr. Smith, in his testimony, agreed that there was an AHA logo on it and that AHA, and that it was AHA content, which it was. It was content taken from the AHA.
Did the district court go too far in that statement?
I believe the district court went too far in its recollection of Dr. Smith's testimony regarding the AHA, because Dr. Smith testified that although he was aware of the AHA, he had not specifically gone to the website and could not testify about exactly what it said. He testified that he had knowledge of end organ injury and the relationship to blood pressure based on his education experience and some familiarity with the AHA. But had he gone to the website and could he confirm that they don't include liver enlargement as a sign? He did not. Your Honor, I see my time is up, and I will address one of the other or more on my reserve time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Ferris-McLean. Counsel for respondent, you may approach and begin. Please state your name and the name of your client or clients.
Thank you, Judge Johnson, and may it please the court. My name is Mark Bradford. I represent Dr. Steinhauser and Family Health Services, Minnesota, PA. This court should affirm the district court's decision to deny appellant's post-trial motion. The court did not abuse its discretion in denying that motion. Much of the argument today has centered on the fraud issue, and I do want to get to that. I intended to start with the admissions that my client is accused of making during trial, just to clarify the record with respect to those. But given some of the questions about the fraud, I'll start there. And I want to start with some of the record citations that the court asked for. The evidentiary record regarding iStockPhoto.com, Judge Johnson, is on pages 183 and 184 of the transcript, where it does reflect that Dr. Smith was shown the website from iStockPhoto.com and agreed that the diagram that appears in the demonstrative is a product of that website and not the AHA's website. On page 178 of the transcript is the support for the district court findings that Dr. Smith agreed that the AHA does not attribute hypertension to the liver. So let me just start and get back to the admissions that Dr. Steinhauser allegedly made at trial, because they do sort of undergird both the negligent non-disclosure issue as well as the claim that the evidence didn't support the jury's verdict here. The alleged admissions are, first one is on page 92 of the addendum, where Dr. Steinhauser was asked, "You knew risks were potentially life-threatening if this was a hypertensive emergency, but you did not tell Mr. and Mrs. Becker of those risks, did you?" So if this was a hypertensive emergency, and hypertensive emergency requires evidence of acute end organ damage. The second admission is on page 316 of the transcript. If symptoms indicate acute end organ damage, you treat it as a hypertensive emergency until proven otherwise, don't you? So all of this, all of these issues about what they did and did not tell Mr. and Mrs. Becker hinge on whether this was a hypertensive emergency. And as we articulated in our brief, that was the core issue presented at trial through the experts. There was simply a disagreement among the experts and among Dr. Steinhauser about whether these symptoms in fact constituted acute end organ damage, which would satisfy the definition of hypertensive emergency. Dr. Steinhauser at no time admitted that this was a hypertensive emergency requiring referral to the emergency room, and two experts agreed that this was not a hypertensive emergency and that Dr. Steinhauser met the standard of care. This is not a situation where the jury's verdict was not supported by the weight of the evidence. In fact, the opposite is true.
Mr. Bradford, drilling down to one part of that, was there a dispute, a factual dispute at trial as to whether Mr. Becker presented with a condition that was acute versus chronic?
Yes.
As opposed to chronic?
Yes.
Okay.
They had an expert who, well, their experts disagreed in some respect with respect to the liver. So they had one expert say the liver, there was evidence of acute end organ damage, although that expert said could be acute, could be chronic. I'm not really sure.
Setting aside the liver.
Yes.
I'm kind of asking about the distinction between acute versus chronic with respect to Mr. Becker.
Yes. Their very first expert, Dr. Brian Smith, said the distinction between acute and chronic is sort of the core distinction you have to make in determining whether somebody is presenting with a hypertensive emergency. The AHA standard or definition of hypertensive emergency was read into the record through Dr. Smith, and he agreed with that definition.
Did he then say, yes, I think it was acute?
What Dr. Smith said was really that the liver was the only concerning finding during the physical examination of Mr. Becker, and with respect to the liver, could be acute, could be chronic. Dr. Smith's position on the standard of care was, if you don't know, you should refer to the emergency room. Whereas the other standard of care expert said, no, we don't send people to the emergency room simply because we might not know. The standard of care is, if it's definitely acute, you go to the emergency room. If it's chronic or there's some question about chronic versus acute, you treat on an outpatient basis.
Okay, so there but was why does acute versus chronic matter with regard to the liver if the liver isn't connected to the heart?
So to be clear, Judge Larkin, they had two experts.
Okay.
So Dr. Brian Smith was their family physician expert who said liver is not connected with hypertension.
Okay.
They also had Dr. Scott Lipson, who testified by video, and he said, I think the liver is connected with hypertension. So they had experts who themselves disagreed on the presentation
and
of acute
the
versus chronic.
And the expert who said, I think the liver is connected, did that expert say, and I think the condition of this fellow's liver was chronic or acute? Or we don't know?
We don't know, right? And I do want to correct one thing that
so
was...
So they had... You know, they were relying primarily on the liver. Was there any evidence presented by plaintiff to say liver is connected to hypertension and his liver condition was acute?
So, doctor...
Because wouldn't the jury have to accept both of those things for a plaintiff
yes.
to prove its case?
Right. So they had... I don't mean to sound ambiguous here, Judge, but they had conflicting evidence on that point, right? So their very first expert... who they introduced Exhibit 45G through, this demonstrative that says liver on it, Dr. Smith said liver's not connected, and AHA says liver's not connected. Then later they have Dr. Lipson come in and say, well, I think liver could be connected, could be chronic, could be acute, but they should have sent him to the ER. So that's sort of the way it came in, and then our experts came in and said liver's not connected. And then, of course, in closing argument, plaintiff's counsel disclaimed that liver was connected. I think there's a comment in the closing argument, the liver's a complete red herring, it's not connected, I don't even know why we're talking about liver. So then you wonder why they included it on Exhibit 45G. There was the only other evidence of acute versus chronic was the proteinuria and the hematuria, which Dr. Smith said could suggest an acute kidney problem. He didn't know. Could be chronic, could be acute. And then our expert says no, that's evidence of a chronic condition. And then there was the pedal edema, the swelling in the feet. So that was the only other evidence. But again, just like with all the other evidence, their expert said could be chronic, could be acute. We don't know. So I hate to be long-winded, but that's the
answer to
your
question. But no, it's
helpful.
I'm just wondering how plaintiff argues, plaintiff won his case if there was no, you know, sure evidence of a chronic or an acute condition that could be linked to the heart, which would justify an argument that this fellow needed to go to the emergency room immediately.
Right. And even if you grant them the most liberal reading of the record to say, okay, let's say that your expert said this was definitely acute and he should have gone to the ER, any condition.
Anything. Okay.
We had experts that said, no, it wasn't. Right, and you are reviewing a jury trial record. And so if there's competing evidence then we give the jury's verdict affirmance. And that's what the district court did here. He said, look, there was an expert, more than one actually, who testified that Dr. Steinhauser did not breach the standard of care because there was no acute symptoms of along with the hypertension.
Could I switch gears for a moment and ask a question regarding the issue of instructing the jury that defendant had taken ill and would not be returning?
Sure.
There's argument in the briefing that looks at that as if it's a jury instruction. Is that really a jury instruction? I found it odd to be looking at case law having to do with jury instructions, addressing elements of offenses.
Right.
This doesn't seem to be a jury instruction.
Not in that sense. It didn't go to any element of any claim. The judge, in fairness to my friend, the judge did, in the context of making jury instructions, tell the jury that Dr. Steinhauser had fallen ill and that they should consider his testimony just like they would any other witness.
Defense counsel requested that the judge do that, correct?
So we requested that the judge tell the jury that he had fallen ill and would not participate in trial. We asked the judge to say he was having a medical emergency. The judge said, I'm not going to do that. They asked for a different instruction that he had something come up, and the judge was concerned about that. But the point here is that the judge carefully considered this issue, right? He considered what we wanted them to say, what him to say, and the judge considered what the other side wanted them to say. And he said, look, I think I have to tell the jury something because every other witness testified by direct and cross, and I'm concerned for the plaintiff that they would give Dr. Steinhauser's testimony less weight if I didn't say something. So he told them to give the witness the same weight as it would any other witness in terms of evaluating that testimony, and that's what the judge did.
How does the jury do that if there wasn't questioning by both sides?
Well, so the issue here is they're the complaining party,
right.
And they had the we don't have to put on any case, right? We're the defendant. We don't have the burden of proof. They called Dr. Steinhauser in their case in chief, subjected him to the adverse cross-examination, completed that examination, after which Dr. Steinhauser didn't return. So it was our side that never got to question him. But the judge was concerned that the jury would give his testimony less weight because he hadn't been presented on direct to tell his side of the story. But if anything, as the district court pointed out, that was an instruction that benefited the plaintiff. And certainly there was no conceivable prejudice. The judge didn't say you should treat his testimony, you know, different because he had fallen ill. He said the exact opposite.
As to prejudice, you can look to the strength of the evidence
yes.
in favor of your client.
Yes, and as I mean,
but,
I think
that's the position in your brief. This doesn't matter because our evidence was so strong, there could not have been a prejudicial effect here.
Correct. I mean, we had two experts say that Dr. Steinhauser met the standard of care. And on the other side, right, they had an expert who said, we're not really sure if this is acute or chronic. So let me just, in the last few minutes, say a few comments about the fraud. And I think both in the briefs and here today, you know, we have a concession that, you know, if you had just called it misleading, that would have been okay. And maybe I would have chosen to do that. I have a lot of respect, obviously, for Ms. McClain, but that's not the issue. The issue is whether it went too far. And I think on the record in this case, it didn't. The citations that I gave you, Judge Johnson, to pages 183 and 84 show that it wasn't just the reference to the liver that isn't attributable to the AHA. It's the diagram itself. And so the diagram came from somewhere else. The attribution itself is significant. I mean, why would you put an attribution to the AHA with the AHA's logo on it with a copyright symbol if the intent was not to attribute the content of the exhibit to the AHA? And that's exactly what the district court found here. On page 178 of the transcript, Dr. Smith testified. Now, this is their expert agreeing that the exhibit was being represented as something from the AHA. And if this were such a significant issue, the reference to fraud, and they had a cognizable defense to the attribution to the AHA, you would think they would have said something in closing argument to say, ladies and gentlemen, you just heard what they said. They've accused us of fraud, but here's what is on this document that is attributable to the AHA, and they never did that. They never told the jury what on this document was attributable to the AHA and what wasn't. And I want to clarify one statement to the extent it may have been unclear in my friend's argument. This document was introduced not during the testimony of Dr. Lipson, the person who said the liver was related. It was introduced during the testimony of Dr. Smith, who said the liver was not related. So you have a demonstrative saying, here's an AHA attribution, liver's related, and it came in during the testimony of an expert who says it's unrelated. So what is the jury going to attribute the liver to? They're going to attribute it to the exhibit that they were shown. I think this is one, too, where the district court had the benefit of seeing how this exhibit was used at trial. He had the benefit of seeing what was displayed to the jury on the web pages that were the jury was shown. This court, unfortunately, does not. But this is a situation where the district court is certainly in the best position to evaluate whether that description, the adjective, was appropriate and concluded within its discretion that it was. So we ask the court to affirm the district court in all respects. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bradford. Ms. McLean, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to quickly address the evidence in support of negligence here. There's been some claim that the evidence through admissions by Dr. Steinhauser was not sufficient in order to support a finding of negligence, and it absolutely was. Everyone agreed on what the standard of care required here. All the medical experts agreed that Mr. Becker had severe hypertension. All of the experts, including the defendant, agreed that what was necessary is to determine if that severe hypertension was affecting his target organs. And Dr. Steinhauser and everyone else, Dr. Steinhauser agreed at page 315 that he didn't have enough information to know whether the abnormal kidney findings were acute or chronic. They were abnormal. There was blood, microscopic blood in his urine, and there was protein in his urine. And Dr. Steinhauser and the medical experts agreed that is evidence of kidney damage. Is it acute or chronic? The reason nobody knew is Mr. Becker did not receive regular health care, as many Americans don't receive regular medical health care because GERD was his only pre-existing condition. So they didn't have enough information to determine whether it was chronic or acute. And I asked him, in fact, at page 316, you agree that clinical exam findings that suggest acute target organ injury must be treated as hypertensive emergency until proven otherwise. You agree with that? And he said, yes. He agreed with that because if you have abnormal kidney findings that there's injury and you don't know whether they're chronic or acute, you are either by no treatment putting them at risk of life-threatening injury or you're treating them. The less risk to the patient is to take them into the hospital to evaluate further and bring their blood pressure down. The risk was to assume this was chronic with no basis for that assumption and send him home and not tell him about it, and not give him a say in that. So I wanted to make that clear. Judge Larkin, you had a really good question about the liver enlargement and how that had anything to do with this. And I will agree, our experts were not in sync on that. Our neurology expert said the way the liver potentially could be implicated, his basis was the liver is involved in making red blood cells. And Mr. Becker had several abnormal findings. He had not only the kidney abnormalities, he had abnormal hematology results. And our neurology expert said, if you have abnormal hematology results, the liver plays a part in red blood cell production. So conceivably, that enlarged liver could also be evidence. That's how it was related. It was never a center point of our case. What was a central point of our case is that there was evidence of kidney damage, and Dr. Steinhauser agreed to that. And he also agreed that the pitting edema, which was when you pushed your fingers into Mr. Becker's lower legs, the indentation remained. He said that can be evidence of heart failure. And heart failure is one of the end organs that can be affected by hypertension. So he had this information that he potentially had organ damage from this hypertension, but he had no data to determine if it had been pre-existing. So he was obligated by his own testimony to send him to the hospital or give him that choice, tell him about the risk. And this is a kind of risk of significant injury that Kornfeld said a patient must know about. That must be disclosed if there is risk of life-threatening injury or death. And it meets that standard. It also meets the standard that this is a risk that a reasonable person would want to know about if they could leave the doctor's office with ongoing acute organ damage and have that continue. That's something a reasonable person would want to know about, and that's a jury question, and the jury should have been able to deliberate on that.
Are you saying that his admission would require him to send Mr. Becker to the ER even based on defendant's evidence about the standard of care?
All of the medical experts agreed on the standard of care, that he had severe hypertension given the numbers, and that what was required then is to look for evidence of organ damage. And everybody agreed on that. What they disagreed on was whether the actual organ damage that there was evidence of was chronic or acute. And Dr. Steinhauser agreed that he didn't have enough information to know if it was chronic or acute. And he agreed, if you can't determine whether it's chronic or acute, you must assume it's acute until proven otherwise. And that's why he was obligated to send him to the ER. That's an admission by the defendant. And when you look at the overall evidence in the case, for a jury to say he wasn't negligent when he admitted to elements of negligence indicates that they were fueled by passion and prejudice. And I will submit that when opposing counsel gave her argument and told the jury that there was this fraudulent exhibit, she said, you know, opposing counsel is not entitled to doctor exhibits and then present them to you as truth. And for that reason, you should find no negligence to question one. So she tied her allegation of fraud, which I still maintain is erroneous. That was an exhibit created by us for demonstrative purposes. It was not substantive. And she disagreed with it, but everything in there had foundational backing to it. And for her to tie that into telling the jury that's why they should find no negligence shows that she fueled the jury by passion and prejudice. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. McLean. Thank you to both attorneys for your excellent presentations. The case is submitted. The court will issue its opinion within 90 days.